This episode of the Ringer NFL Show is presented by State Farm. Create an affordable price just for you when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling, just another way to save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. Think about all the stuff you can do now on Sundays after the Super Bowl's over. Adventurous activities. You need a Hyundai to get you there. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped for any adventure with features like available H-Track, all-wheel drive. You can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm JJ John Jastrzemski.
And I'm Jason Goff. And if you haven't heard, The Ringer has gone local.
I'm bringing the fire. I'm bringing the rain from the Big Apple with my show, New York, New York.
And I'm repping Chi-Town with my new show, The Full Goal, on all things Chicago.
We've got episodes three nights a week with all the reaction to the local teams and guests.
Plus bonus episodes around all the big games and storylines.
So whether you're uptown, downtown, in the burbs, or a transplant,
make sure you follow New York, New York and The Full Goal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast.
It is the Ringer NFL Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kevin Clark, joined on a post-Super Bowl Wednesday morning by Nora Princiati. Nora, hello.
Hello, Kevin. It's
You're back in New York.
So I am back in New York. It's very different doing this back in the homestead versus the 300-level concourse of SoFi Stadium. Next to a Pepsi machine.
Just a big game atmosphere.
It really was. The Super Bowl was fun, bud. It was good to see you.
It was great. I really missed live sporting events. I missed being at Super Bowls.
Can I tell you what I missed? I missed stadiums. I freaking love stadiums. Stadiums are cool.
I will say this. I felt like the media... I did a little bit of this, but I felt like the media
That's a great way to start a sentence.
They were all like, oh my God, it's amazing to be back. It feels normal. It's like we missed one Super Bowl. We're going to be fine.
Yeah, but it made it feel like a long time.
I know, but we missed one
Super Bowl. Yes, we missed one Super Bowl, but I had not spoken in person to a football player in a very long time. It had been a while.
That's a good point. It'd been a while. The Radio Row thing, I mean, like that to me, just like seeing people... I called it the wave zone. It's where you know someone well enough to just give them a little wave and then just keep it moving. Like Ron Rivera.
I don't do
just
the like wave. I do like a head wave. Nod.
I'm not going to stop and chat with Ron Rivera. We're not that close, but I can give him a little wave. That to me, that was the networking that I needed. Just little waves. The wave zone. All right, so we're going to do straight thoughts from the Super Bowl, and then we're going to do an off-season preview show. We did this last year. I really like it, where we just kind of map out exactly what's going to happen over the next six months, something like that. I don't know. It's going to be weird. We'll start here. Were you surprised that we ran out of topics so quickly as a media group? And I'm just saying, we did this on Bill yesterday. We did this on all the ESPN shows, Fox. Are you surprised we ran out of topics so quickly that on Tuesday we were doing Matthew Stafford Hall of Fame talk?
No. I think Matthew Stafford Hall of Fame talk is the... It is the center of the gravitational pull that keeps us all spewing out content.
Isn't part of the problem that there's so many unknowables that you can't really debate? Like, is Sean McVay going to come back? Is Aaron Donald going to come back? That we just kind of had to glom on to that?
Like, yeah.
We're in a holding pattern with the Rams right now. We don't know. We can't. The thing is, we can't say, are the Rams going to be back in the Super Bowl next year? Because we don't know what that looks like.
Yeah. Also, we can't do that for any team. I mean, we'll fake it a zillion times. But I also just think that there's nobody in media who does not wake up in the morning desperate to just be like, is Matthew Stafford a Hall of Famer?
I've never had that impulse.
You've never had that impulse? I don't know.
I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of broad, big picture thoughts on the Hall of Fame, though. So I'm happy to argue about that. Having thought about it for 3 days, what's your number one Super Bowl takeaway?
Matthew Stafford is not a Hall of Famer. I think so. Okay. Here's what I've been thinking a lot about. Ben Solak's Kendall Blanton injury theory really wormed its way into my brain. And I love it as a theory. But after thinking about it for a few days And I also think that some of the Sean McVay mic'd up stuff kind of supports this. I think they just made an adjustment. I don't think that Kendall Blanton's loose joints were what caused the Rams to make the adjustment that won them the Super Bowl. I think it is a little concerning that it happened so late, but I do think that eventually McVay was just like, all right, we got to let Stafford go win this.
I think that Jeremy Fowler reported that the coaches were just, including Sean, were just like, all right, Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford need to win this game. They spread out the offense by 3-4 yards, something like that. That was next-gen stats thing. And they just went out there and took advantage of the matchups. Like, they could have done that. I mean, Bill and I talked about this yesterday, but like, I feel like that adjustment could have come earlier, but that's picking nits for a team that didn't win the Super Bowl. So I understand that part of it. I think that my biggest takeaway at this point is that I think that, so what's really funny, because when the conference championships happen, GMs a lot of times run reports on the teams, and they just, you know, height, weight, speed. Are we missing anything? You know, what they consider those the four best teams. I would say when a team wins a Super Bowl or gets to the Super Bowl, owners kind of say, I want that no matter what it is, you know, and like David Tepper is going to sit there and say, I want what the Rams had. And I kind of feel like we're opening up a real trap door. Because
the answer to that is many superstar players.
And by the way, I mean, the two best, Cooper Kupp and Aaron Donald, were just drafted, right? Like, they were just drafted. And then you augment that with tons and tons of additional talent, including kind of an overpay for Von Miller, which ended up working. Obviously, Von Miller was a beast the entire playoffs, so let's not discount that. But they did at the time probably overpay because they needed the Broncos to pick up the contract.
Well, right. It's not like they overpaid because they got swindled. They overpaid because they didn't have $9 million.
Right, right. No, I get that. It's just that there was a lot of draft capital and money capital put into this. And I Correct. Don't think, I think the all-in thing is a little bit overblown in the sense that just a lot of these guys will be back. We don't know, obviously, about Odell Beckham with the injury, especially. We don't know about Von Miller, obviously. But as long as Aaron Donald and Sean McVay don't retire, they're at least positioned to be a pretty good team next year. But it's interesting to me because it reminds me a little bit when I was covering the NBA, Wick Grousback, the Celtics owner, said that he did a study. Did a study that, is that your guy?
There's a very funny photo of me talking to Wick on the floor of the Garden. When I was just randomly helping out with some Celtic stuff, but we struck up a conversation about shoes, and then I'm trying to remember which. It might have been like Dave McMenamin or somebody who covers the NBA chose that moment as his opportunity to like tweet out a photo of the owner. And there was a lot of like, what's that football reporter doing there in the comments? And
there was a lot of there's a lot of buzz is what you're saying.
Yeah. And my mom like loves that photo because she likes the Celtics. And it's like very hard for me to express to her that was just like a very random moment that is not particularly meaningful. But anyway, big Wick.
Okay. Good. We got that out there. That's Nora Cannon.
I'll find the photo somewhere.
But Grousback said at Sloan like a decade ago, he said that they put the big three together because 24 out of 25 teams that they had studied who won the championship had a top 50 player of all time and then two supporting all-stars, okay? And this became like a thing, like an ownership. Like I remember talking to like NBA GMs who were just like, yep, we got to get our big three. And it's like all of a sudden, what, you're trying to trade for Josh Smith? Like I think sometimes the kind of elevator pitch that franchises – the owners want out of their franchise can be very dangerous. And so it'll be really interesting to see what kind of lessons. I mean, I think that the Seahawks winning in 2013, there were GMs or owners who just said, I want tall cornerbacks. I want big physical cornerbacks to counteract the passing boom, all that stuff. It's like, okay, good luck getting Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and Brandon Browner and all those guys. And Pete Carroll, one of the best defensive minds in the history of modern football, all that stuff. So the lessons that these teams learn. Aggressive owners want to win now. Are they going to try to trade a first-round pick for veterans? Are they going to try to trade a second- and third-round pick? Are they going to, you know, this is not an amazing free agency class. You have guys like Tron Armstead who might reach. I don't really know what the deal is. Obviously, Saints have cap problems. Devontae Adams is the top free agent. He's not going to reach free agency unless something crazy happens. He's going to be franchise tagged. But betting big on talent, this sort of roster, is something that the Rams did perfectly, and it increased their margin for error. As I said, the players that they drafted were the two best, but then they augmented that. I'm intrigued to see how teams adjust to seeing the Rams plan.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just that the other way to explain what that is truly just to say have really good players. And don't get me wrong, it's a great strategy. It's just there's a lot of ways to skin a cat.
But let's use the David Tepper example. The Panthers don't have really good players.
Right.
So how do you do that? You overpay to get them, right? Like that's why I'm saying that we might see some like really funny mistakes over the next year.
Well, but the other thing that the Rams did was they understood their window. They got the good players at the right time. If you get good players,
they also had a generationally good coach.
Yeah.
Which most teams don't have. The Rams had all these advantages, and that's why trying to replicate what the Rams did is probably going to be a disaster for a handful of teams.
I think that's true. I don't think it's so much about, I mean, they do, and you've done a great job of pointing these things out. They're in LA, people want to play in LA. There's all this sort of infrastructure that makes good players more inclined to go there. And that stuff does matter. I do think that it's easy to overstate that when it just comes down to they got all the really good players at the same time, right? And they had them fit together into a very good football team. I think it is less about, it's great that guys want to play for Sean McVay and he's a good coach and absolutely helps. Having, for instance, I don't know what Stephon Gilmore is really giving the Panthers right now, right? Like,
well, that was just a flyer, basically. But yes.
Well, sure. But how much do you... And it didn't cost them. But at a certain point, it would, right?
Yeah.
And if the guys aren't all on the same timeline, then I'm not sure what it gets you. Like, the Rams are going to have to... They will have to pay the bills eventually.
The bills come due. This was a credit card. This was a credit card Super Bowl that worked.
But it's not going to matter because they won a Super Bowl. So I do think that if you want to find an applicable lesson from the Rams, it's understand your window. Understand when the window is open and when it might close and when it is worth being super aggressive. Because if other teams are going to be super aggressive, then ultimately, at a certain point, teams are going to have to keep pace. And I know we talk about the Bengals as this sort of anomaly, but and they are, right? They are because of Burrow, because of Chase, because it did feel during a lot of the season like they caught lightning in a bottle. And ultimately the thing that was their undoing was that they might not have recognized how quickly the window was going to open, or they just might not have had the resources to fix the defense and the offensive line in one off season, right? So maybe you go out and try to do the offensive line this off season. However, the Bengals have spent an uncharacteristic amount of money over the last two free agencies, an uncharacteristically Bengals amount of money. So it's not as though there's no correlation between their output and their success in getting to the Super Bowl. So I do think if we want to find something that sort of ties it all together, it's like the better an understanding you can have of if you're in the window, then the more likely success is. Because I think we can talk about the Vikings at some point. There's a lot of bad that happens in the
NFL.
Can
we talk about the Vikings?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's been a lot of Vikings news over the last couple of days. But there's a lot of bad that can come from not understanding when the window is open and when the window is maybe closed.
Kevin Demoff, the president, was on a panel with me, and I said this a couple weeks ago, but I'll repeat it because it's important. He said the winning is the best competitive advantage. That's what we saw with the Patriots, right? And it's guys who want to be a part of something. They'll take $2 million less, and then you get somewhere. I mean, like, how much – you think about the Patriots window and how much of that was – if you're just doing the credit card thing. I mean, Bill Belichick was so good at managing rosters every single year. And part of that was understanding when to buy low on Randy Moss, and Randy Moss wanted to be there. Randy Moss didn't want to be in Oakland. He wanted to be in New England. You saw that even, I mean, this is a little different, but you saw that with Antonio Brown a couple of years ago. Corey Dillon. Guys, Darrell Revis. Guys just want to be a part of that. And you add in the fact that this is not in New England. This is not in Foxborough. This is in Los Angeles. There's sort of a Hollywood feel to it. There's not intense. I was talking to someone a couple of days ago about the Rams and what the Rams. And they're basically saying, you know, there's not an intense media pressure as there is on the East Coast.
And there's heavily monetizable branding opportunities, right?
NFTs. Like,
and just a huge infrastructure of endorsement deals, people who understand how to do endorsement deals for athletes or for celebrities. Like, there's a lot of sort of off-field opportunity in that place. And to your point, it comes without the heavy scrutiny of a New England, where there's a lot of off-field money to be made because the fan base is incredibly passionate. But it's a little bit of a different thing, where if you want to make some t-shirts, you will sell a crap ton of your t-shirts. Like, Julian Edelman can sell a lot more t-shirts to Patriots fans than Aaron Donald can sell to Rams fans. But there's a whole other set of things that are available in Los Angeles that are maybe not available in Boston. And it does come without the same level of feeling completely under the microscope. Now, there's a whole other sort of celebrity industrial complex that probably has its own influence on guys' lifestyles if they live out there. But I do think it makes a difference that there are bigger superstars walking around in the greater Los Angeles area than, you know, Cooper Kupp. That's not necessarily the same in certain other places.
I will say this. You mentioned Aaron Donald selling t-shirts. I'm watching the parade right now. I don't know if you are. Aaron Donald is shirtless.
Yeah.
How many defensive tackles in the NFL could go shirtless and it look cool? Not a lot.
It's not a lot.
Not a lot. I'll say that. Donald can pull off some stuff. He's an athletic phenomenon. Is what I'd say about Aaron Donald. And we saw that on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1. It's amazing.
Speaking of Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
We were going to wrap up some Super Bowl and then do some off-season, into the off-season nuggets.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't quite sure where to put Aaron Donald in this. Can we talk about Aaron Donald a little bit more?
I mean, what else is there besides he's shirtless on a parade float?
Well, he's shirtless on a parade float. He might retire. Jeremy Fowler at ESPN reported this morning that there's some buzz that instead of retiring, Aaron Donald would take a substantial raise.
Oh, cool.
Perhaps to become.
I gotta
yeah,
try
I don't know
that.
If you could have seen
I gotta
this
try
one coming.
That. I'm gonna email Sean and Connor today and just be like, hey, man, Mal, I'm just gonna say I'm either retiring.
I'm thinking
or,
about
or,
stepping
or,
away.
Yeah,
or I will
or
take a 15%
also,
markup on the highest paid defensive contract.
Yep. Yeah.
This is what Jeremy Fowler is reporting. Donald is interested in. He would like to become the league's highest paid defensive player to keep playing in 2022, or perhaps, and this is characterized as chatter, perhaps receive a 15% markup on the current high water mark, which is TJ Watt's $28 million a year. Seems pretty good. Shirtless on a parade float.
So Charles Robinson also reported that earlier this week, that a lot of this is just contract buzz. I believe he's the highest paid defensive tackle in the top 10 in defensive players, but he needs to, it would make sense he'd be the highest paid defensive player in football. He's the best player in football. We saw that. Like, he single-handedly basically blew up a Joe Burrow drive at the end there. And some of that was self-inflicted by the Bengals, but giving it to Samaje Perine was not incredible. But having Aaron Donald was the factor. So pay the man.
Aaron Donald is underpaid at this point, and he should go for it and try to get his money. I will say there is some sort of selective reporting of what exactly he's set to earn next year. His contract is for $9.25 million in base salary with a $5 million roster bonus. He already got his signing bonus. Like, that adds up to make it look like he is so drastically underpaid, when really his take home is like $22 million versus, you know, maybe roughly $30 if he set a new high water mark. Again, go after your money, Aaron Donald. He deserves it.
By the way, Chris Jones is actually making $3 million more this year. And so I think that's an easy correction to make. So that's that. I'm looking at cap hit right now. So Aaron Donald's at the 20th. It's Aaron Donald's behind Jimmy Garoppolo. That's something's broken at this point.
Oh boy.
DeMarcus Lawrence will make more against the cap this year. Leonard Williams will make more against the cap this year. As I said, Chris Jones, Joey Bosa, Za'Darius Smith. So there's some easy corrections to make here I mean, this is also part of why you try to lock in a long-term deal. It's a six-year deal. That's the point of a six-year deal. It kicked in 2018, I believe. So I understand why Aaron Donald wouldn't get paid. I understand why the Rams might not want to do it, but they have to do it. That's the leverage. That's the leverage. Is I'm going to retire. It's going to be like how Kyler Murray is going to be able to float. I'm going to go play baseball if he doesn't get his way in Arizona, and I support him for doing that. You find your leverage wherever you can do it because the NFL provides no leverage.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. Think about all the stuff you can do now on Sundays after the Super Bowl's over. Adventurous activities. You need a Hyundai to get you there. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped for any adventure with features like available H-Track, all-wheel drive. You can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com.
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
So comes out that Joe Burrow has an MCL injury. Ian Rappaport is reporting that he will not need surgery. He's just going to rest. He will not miss a substantial amount of time. But this kind of underscores, by the way, Zach Taylor told reporters that Joe Burrow had the sprained MCL in the game, obviously, and said he wasn't coming out. Zach Taylor said that Burrow said he wasn't coming out. Rest, recovery, all that stuff. But this underscores what we already knew, which is we as a football punditry need to keep pointing out that the Bengals need to do everything they can to protect Joe Burrow. Because just because he likes contact doesn't mean he should take contact. And I think there's a lot they can do this offseason, and we had this discussion on Sunday night. Solak and I have continued to have this discussion, but the Bengals have to do everything. You know, Marcus Spears was on ESPN yesterday saying, you know, don't even look at anybody else at the combine. Just get as many linemen as you can and figure it out. I would also say maybe you look at cornerbacks as well to replace an Eli Apple type, but I'm in his camp. Just scout as many linemen as you can and fix this thing, and also spend money in the free agency market, because you know the Chiefs not only traded a first round pick, they signed Joe Tooney to the biggest contract in the position's history. They drafted two guys. They saw this thing pretty quickly. Bengals are a different franchise than the Chiefs, but they got to fix this thing.
Well, yeah, and there's guys like Brandon Scherff, Ryan Jensen, Tron Armstead. Like, there are high profile veterans available. The Bengals should have around $50 million in cap space. And, you know, I think Jesse Bates is going to be a big,
yep.
What do they do there question. That could be a franchise tag, but they should be able to, you know, we were talking about this a little bit after the game. I don't think that they need to do a full scale Chiefs. Let's literally throw all of our resources at this one problem.
Yeah.
I think they probably should not just do one upgrade, right? Like, take a couple bites out of the apple and see what happens. And I think they have the resources to do that. Now, obviously, look, like they drafted Jackson Carmen, and whether you think that that is sort of enough going into a draft where there was a major debate over whether they should draft Sewell instead of Chase, I think the book is pretty clearly closed on that. I will say, I think if you're going into that thinking that's the kind of guy that they need to help protect Burrow, you probably weren't fully satisfied with Jackson Carmen. That being said, I think they probably thought they were getting more. They were going to get more out of Jackson Carmen than they ultimately did. So
You mean anything? They expected anything out of him?
The other piece of this is that the swings you take, you know, sometimes they miss, right? So That's why you take a couple swings.
And that's why the Chiefs thing, by the way, the Chiefs, for instance, signed Kyle Long last year as part of this, and he didn't play. He was hurt. And so.
Right. But it cost them what? $5 million?
Right. That's what I'm saying is when you overcorrect, you fix things. So that's.
Yes. Now I do. I will say, I think the Chiefs, if we're talking about windows, the Chiefs were fully aware that their window had been open. Like, just, you know, Rapunzel. And in that context, choosing, we are just going to focus on solving one problem.
Yeah.
I think makes a little bit more sense than this. I think the Bengals probably have to spread the resources around a little bit, but they have the resources so they can do it.
Okay. Let's move on to the offseason. Number one thing you're watching this offseason. Offseason basically officially starts in 2 weeks at the Combine. What are we watching?
Can I just say that I hate that this is true, and I really wanted to come up with a different answer, but I can't because it's Aaron Rodgers.
So, Aaron Rodgers, according to reports, is now a single man.
Still chasing that second ring.
Yep, single man, according to TMZ. Just let that hang there for a while. Okay.
The answer is either what is Green Bay going to do to keep him, on what terms are they going to continue their partnership, or where is he going to go, and what is that team going to do to lure him somewhere else? And a lot of the Aaron Rodgers discourse makes me roll my eyes into the back of my head, but he's the MVP. Like, there's a real, this is just a seismic potential shift that could happen this offseason. I know we went through it last offseason and it didn't take place. I think it's more likely to happen now. It is what it is. It is the most important story of the offseason, as mind-numbingly annoying as some of the conversation around it can be.
Okay. Let's back up here. So there's optimism, according to Ian Rappaport, according to Adam Schefter, that things are going to be fixed there. Part of this, I think, is what I've been saying for weeks, which is there's not an obvious option. Like, a Tennessee would be an obvious option if Ryan Tannehill didn't have that huge contract and hadn't committed to him. Is Indianapolis any better?
I think Denver is a pretty good option.
I mean, just because Nathaniel Hackett's there? Like, I think that the situation in Green Bay is better than the Denver situation.
I do, too. I just don't know. I don't think that this is purely, I think he wants to go somewhere with a good roster with good skill position players. I think Denver fits that. If there is enough of, like, part of this is just like, does he want to leave Green Bay? And if right. That is true, then it's a little bit less about like, is this, what is the best among other options?
Okay. So my guess on this is that he stays in Green Bay. What I'll say is that Stafford and Brady, 2 years in a row, going to a team and winning a Super Bowl, changing their narrative, changing the entire story of their career. And it sounds crazy that Brady did that, but he did. Stafford certainly did. Probably has broken some brains in the sense that okay, we can improve our situation. But Rodgers is not in the Matthew Stafford zone that Stafford was in Detroit. That was a rebuilding team. That was Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes saying, let's just start anew. Let's go get Jared Goff. I don't think that's a completely different time in the evolution of a franchise. So I don't think I think those are two separate cases. The best place is Devontae Adams on a franchise tag and Aaron Rodgers throwing to him. The line is good. The defense is good. I mean, the problem was Maurice Straton, the special teams coach, who was overseeing a really bad unit all year. And I'm not Bill Belichick levels of obsessed with special teams, but I think special teams is so damn important. And every good coach who's ever touched a football has said that special teams is you know, wildly important. I'm not sure why Matt LaFleur let that fester. And I'm not sure why Matt LaFleur,
did he let it fester? They fired their special teams coach the year before.
No, I'm saying during the season, it was obvious that Packers special teams was awful.
Yeah, but what at that point, like, your options are kind of limited.
I'd fix it. fire people.
I think they tried it didn't work. They did fire people.
After the fact. I actually didn't want to get down that rabbit hole.
I think Matt really love that we're yelling about Packers coach. Special teams.
That's the reason that they didn't make the Super Bowl.
Yes. And there are 30 teams in the NFL that have reasons they didn't make the Super Bowl.
Special teams meltdown.
I completely agree. I'm just saying that it's not as though the Packers didn't look at the season before and go, our special teams is fine. And then it wasn't.
They promoted a guy. The special teams was a disaster the year before. They promoted a guy who didn't have what it takes. And then they lost. They're out because of it. If you replay that season 100 times, there's a hell of a lot of them where they get to the Super Bowl. A hell of a lot of them. They just had a special teams disaster. Anyway, point being is that you don't need – it's almost like what we're talking about with the Bengals offensive line, right? You just put your emphasis on that and things will be fine.
There is a difference between trying to fix something and having it not work and ignoring a problem. I think when someone has a big problem, when there's a big issue on a team, like the Packers special teams was the season prior to this one, and you don't address it, that is unforgivable. They tried to address it and it did not work. That remains a problem. I don't think it is quite the same indictment as this is a disaster and you did nothing about it.
I don't think you can fire a coordinator in the middle of the season. John Harbaugh did that with Cam Cameron. And promoted Jim Caldwell. Like you can fix things. You can't just look at a unit and say this unit sucks. We'll deal with that in February.
You shouldn't necessarily, but you should also recognize that if you fire a coordinator mid-season, you're gonna have some hurdles that you were not necessarily gonna have if you did it at the end of the year.
Well, how could it be worse? That's my question. How could it have been worse? Anyway, This is a very.
It just
weird...
wouldn't necessarily be better.
Okay, well, I'm telling you something. They bottomed out. They lost. Like, it was bad. So, again, Matt LaFleur, very good coach. The point I'm making is that the Green Bay is the best situation as long as they don't have weird sort of meltdowns in areas that do not have to do with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers could have done more in that game, but they also should have won that game with just the bare minimum. Matthew Stafford did not have a bunch of incredible games in a row as quarterback in this year. Not even Joe Burrow did, right? Patrick Mahomes made mistakes in the second half against Cincinnati. Every quarterback is going to have games where they're not putting the team on their back. Aaron Rodgers was having one of those games, and the special teams doomed him, right? But I think that it's still the best place for him. And there are, you know, Pittsburgh, maybe if he wants to do that thing, he can, I guess, force a trade there. I'm just not seeing a lot of it. And, you know, you look at I understand, and this is kind of the next point I want to bring up. I understand that the cap can be massaged really, really easily. I believe the cap this year is going to be $208 million, which is up, obviously, from $182 million, which was the 2021 cap that was in part installed
because of COVID.
And now the cap spikes. But a lot of these really good teams are at the cap right now.
Yeah, well, the cap spikes relative to last season, but right. teams all plan years in advance, and teams were
Some teams.
Okay. But they were the ones that do were working on the assumption that the cap would be, you know, where it is, if not higher at this point.
Right, exactly. And so the teams that are capped out, and again, this is temporary until they start restructuring. The Cowboys, I saw a stat the other day, can go from over to severely under with just a couple of restructures. But right now, Bills, Packers, Cowboys, Rams, all over. Chiefs have $3 million. The Chargers, Bengals, and Jags have a ton of cap space. And you wonder if the Bengals already did this last year. They add Trey Hendrickson for $60 million. They signed Mike Hilton. They go out and they're active in free agency and it works. You wonder, I'm looking at the Chargers here. With a ton of cap space, with Justin Herbert on that deal, did they go out and try to make a splash this offseason and try to get where the Bengals were this season?
Yeah, why not?
It just makes a lot of sense. I honestly think.
I mean, they got to spend the money.
They got to spend the. I mean, do they? We've seen this movie before from some teams, but the thing with the Chargers for me is like I almost think they're a year a year late in that. And listen, they've been adding in free agency for years. It's not like they're the Bengals and they never had. Like, they went out and got guys. But they had holes on their roster.
The Bengals have, like, seriously spent in free agency for, like, 3 years in a row. I'm totally with you that there is that the way they spend money influences the franchise. But, like, we shouldn't pretend that this Bengals team was built without expenditures.
No, I don't. I don't think they had. I'm just saying that the last couple of years with Duke Tobin has been completely counter to what they had done in the past, and that they liked their own guys, and they had a mode of operation that they've gotten away from a little bit, but on the other hand, there are some areas that they're still the same.
But the important point is that they have gotten away from it. They've been fourth among NFL teams in free agent spending, in the past two off seasons.
Yes, and they picked perfectly on most of those, and that's why they were in the Super Bowl this year, is because they helped out Joe Burrow.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
If you're the Jaguars right now, do you try to spend big and just hope that Trevor Lawrence gets where you think he's capable of getting? You're going to have an actual coach in Doug Peterson. I kind of think you just kind of go for it and just hope that. I mean, we didn't know anything. I'm the only person who was, as we know from that clip on the Rich Eisen show, I'm the only person who's talking about the Bengals before this season. I can run that back. Rich said 0.0 people are talking about the Bengals, except for me. Trevor Lawrence was dealt one of the worst hands in, I don't know, like the last decade for any young quarterback, where he's got Urban Meyer out at the bars and not knowing what he's doing, doesn't want to be there, the staff's not very good, no talent around him. Like, I think at some point you have to take a leap of faith that he's going to get where you need to go and Doug Peterson's going to help you, and then you just sign a bunch, as many guys as you can, and hope for the best, right?
So this goes back to the point about the one lesson that I do think is applicable from the Rams build about understanding your window. This is why it's hard to get good sometimes in the NFL. I think I agree with you. The problem is, if it doesn't work, then you just went and wasted a bunch of resources on players that aren't going to help you achieve anything. I do think you're right. I think you have to do it, because if you can get that team to a place where it doesn't feel hopeless, then that is going to pay you dividends, because more players are going to want to come play with Trevor Lawrence when they feel like, okay, this is moving in the right direction. This isn't a dumpster fire. But if it goes badly, then you know, the cupboard is not quite so stocked to be able to reset. So I think you're right. It's just that it's not a move you can make without risk.
All right, here are the top teams with cap space. $64 million for the Dolphins, $57 million for the Chargers, $56 million for the Jags, $48 million for the Bengals, $44 million for the Jets.
I mean, to be clear, like, if we're talking about sort of capitalizing on a window, the Chargers should just spend it all.
As should maybe,
like,
the
that
Bengals.
Is the team of that list where it's just like go, 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 go.
But the Bengals have flexibility too.
Yes.
So it'll be. I'm fascinated to see it this offseason. Again, it's not like
No. I don't mean the Bengals are not. I just feel like we've talked about that. The Bengals should absolutely use.
Steelers
have
32. Seahawks. Colts also in the top 10. Broncos in the top 10. What other offseason things are you going to be watching?
Well, there's still like a decent bit of coaching stuff to tie up. I'm curious, like, exactly how the Saints are going to structure themselves. there's still a little bit of there was a story out that Eric Bieniemy was considering trying to put himself in a position to call plays. I think Eric Bieniemy should do whatever he wants to do. I don't think that will work. I just want to say that I don't think that will work, because the previous guys who had the same issues with being under Andy Reid, they got jobs just fine. And we've seen Joe Judge be the Patriots wide receivers coach and have that be okay. I think it is completely unfair that Eric Bieniemy has had to wait this long for a real shot at a head coaching job. Unfortunately, I don't think that's because people, I think the specter of Andy Reid is an after the fact excuse that is being made. I don't think that it is the real thing that is holding him back. So I hope that he continues to coach Patrick Mahomes. Just wanted to put that out there.
I agree. Well, you can't criticize the Joe Judge hire because it worked out so well.
Right. That's true. Sometimes scoreboard. Results over process.
I agree. I mean, I think there's a couple of looming things. You know, we talked about this on Bill yesterday, but like the Sean Payton thing, that's going to be looming over every single team. 27 teams probably are 28 are one bad week, one bad month away from a Sean Payton rumor. If Sean McVay became a TV guy, it would just increase 100-fold. And then that kind of goes into the Dallas part of this, which is, you know, I was reading a PFF piece the other day that was pretty interesting. That basically said that CeeDee Lamb is the only pass catcher who's guaranteed to be back next year. We don't know what else that looks like. And Mike McCarthy is going to have to do some coaching. And I don't necessarily know if he's up for that. And I don't know what the wasn't there a website that used to just like poll fans on how much confidence they had in coaches? I'm guessing that the confidence is not high right now with Mike McCarthy in Dallas. The way that the game ended against San Francisco, the fact that San Francisco then pushed the Rams to the limit, obviously beat the Packers, like this should have been much, much better. And I think that there are people now who think that the idea of promoting Kellen Moore to head coach after, you know, would have been just as disastrous. I don't know. I'm not in Dallas. The beat writers have a further hand on that. Now there's Dan Quinn stuff. Mike McCarthy was asked about Dan Quinn being promoted last year. Like, there's so much that goes on. There was a report today from Don Van Natta that there was a bunch of settlements with the PR executive who just left. Like, a lot of weird shit going on in Dallas. I know that's a constant thing, but there's a lot of weird shit that's going on. That's my point.
Well, also, there's a lot of weird shit going on. And then, okay, you mentioned the receivers. Randy Gregory may no longer be a part of that team.
That's right.
DeMarcus Lawrence may no longer be a part of that team. That offensive line is not what it once was. Dak is Dak, but injuries are piling up. I very much still believe that Dak is a great quarterback, and his ability mentally, just pre-snap, post-snap recognition, I think can, you know, if his body is hurting even more and more as the hits pile up and the injuries pile up, I think he can overcome that just because of how smart he is, how smart of a player he is. But there is a real possibility that this Cowboys roster is drastically different than it has been over the last couple of seasons. And yeah, I mean, we got into this conversation talking about Sean Payton and Sean Payton rumors. You know who is absolutely one bad week, if not less, away from some Sean Payton rumors? It's the Dallas Cowboys. And I if you want to flag a team...
It's already there. It's already happened. Mike McCarthy hasn't even had to lose a game yet for there to be rumors. He's also getting Dan Quinn rumors. He's getting from all sides.
If you want to flag a team that is like a good team that we think of as a good team and put some kind of disaster potential on them for next season, you could find worse candidates than the Cowboys, I think.
Hey, I have two questions. Number one, is there going to be a second year breakout quarterback?
Mac Jones. I don't know. I mean, I think the answer would be if Trevor Lawrence looks like Trevor Lawrence, that would qualify. The problem is, I don't think we've seen, like, there has to be a combination of the guy and the situation. And I'm not sure I would choose any of those guys to have the right combination of personal skills to do that and where they are. Like, I'm just not sure that the Jacksonville roster will be in a place to really showcase that if Lawrence takes a big jump. That said, last game of the year, he looked really, really good. And that over the course of a full season, I guess, would constitute that kind of leap.
I'm going on a limb here and going against the run of everything I've seen and heard.
Trey Lance.
I get that Trey Lance, quote, isn't ready. But isn't that the whole point of the pick, is to get him ready? Like, isn't by September 2022, isn't that Kyle Shanahan's job to get him ready? I trust Kyle Shanahan on that.
Yeah, but if we're talking about the second year leap,
uh-huh,
and everything that we've seen shows us that often, most often, when a quarterback makes a big leap, it's into that second year. Trey Lance didn't really have the first year that you think of when you think of a quarterback making a second year jump.
I agree with that. But I'm saying, if you're asking me who's got actual, like, everybody else, I think it's going to take a while. I don't know what the deal is with the Jaguars roster. Zach Wilson showed flashes and got better as the season went along, but, like, I'm not hitching my wagon to that at all. Justin Fields kind of the same thing. If I had to pick, I'm just saying all of those quarterbacks will be better. All of them will be better in from year one to year two. That's the jump. Statistically, that's the jump from year one to year two. I'm just saying, if this time next year we're saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe blank, I think the most likely option would be Trey Lance because of the talent around him, because of the coaching staff, all that stuff.
And that's based off the same ideas we had when they drafted him, was just like, yeah.
Situation matters, but also just, of course he's not ready. He played like basically one full college season. And then he practiced with Kyle Shanahan for a year.
Yeah. I worry that he didn't practice as the starter as much as you would like.
I get that. Okay. So let me say, I did this a couple of weeks ago and I shared this. I texted a Chiefs person and I said, I need to put something to rest here. What would Patrick Mahomes have looked like if he had started from game one? Like, there was no, what if Alex Smith was never born, right? It's like, It's a Wonderful Life, but there's no Alex Smith. It's a free idea for a movie, by the way. No Alex Smith. It's a Wonderful Life. And he said there would have been a lot of mistakes, but it would have been obvious that he was the guy. And so I think because we never saw Mahomes week one, because we never saw even Lamar Jackson. Remember, Lamar Jackson wasn't the starter until the second half of his rookie season. And also, he made a lot of mistakes. He had that playoff game where he was real bad. But it was obvious that he was the guy. I think it's hard to judge a rookie quarterback because a lot of times some of the guys who have really, I mean, you know, Josh Allen, when I talked to Brandon Bean a couple of weeks ago, months ago now, he said he's just happy Josh Allen survived that first season where they didn't have a lot around him. They didn't want him to start, and then he started. It's really hard to judge young quarterbacks, and at some point you're almost just guessing because so much of it comes down to work ethic, situation, coaching. There's no linear trajectory for a young quarterback right now. None. We don't know.
I just think it's unlikely that, first of all, Trey Lance played a lot less college football than Patrick Mahomes. He's also probably not Patrick Mahomes.
I completely agree with that. I'm just saying, when we're talking about judging rookie quarterbacks, it's very hard. So,
that's, I guess, my we'll take. Find out. I don't think it's going to be Lance. I love Mark, you, buddy, but I don't think it's going to be Lance.
Mark Wahlberg, son Russillo. He tagged Tom Holland, and I thought Tom Holland was on Russillo, but it appears Mark Wahlberg's on Russillo. So, it's good stuff. Anything else in this offseason?
Who do you think is going to be quarterback of the Bucks?
Kyler Murray.
Ho, 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 ho!
That was a joke. I don't know. Kyler Murray stuff's weird. We didn't even get to that.
I think it's, we got to go out on that.
What if it's Jameis?
Fun.
Fun? That's the word for it?
Fun. I'd have a good time.
All right. This has been the Ringer NFL Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. Thank you to Chris Sutton and Arjuna Ramkapoor for production help. We'll be back next week. Draft stuff in full gear. The Ringer NFL Draft Show. Ben Solak, Danny Heifetz, Danny Kelly.
Ever heard of him?
You will not get smarter analysis anywhere about the draft, about football, anywhere. Those guys are, DK and Ben Solak are two of the best draft analysts on the planet. Check out the Ringer Draft Guy.
I thought you were going to say you will not get smarter.
No, that's right. That's more or less right.
Guys, no. I got to say, Ben and I got a lot of good feedback for just like hijacking the end of the Super Bowl pod. Might do it a little more often.
Just taking over. Just I'm the captain now stuff. Just I start reading the credits and you guys just start talking amongst yourselves.
And the pod. I'll shut up.
Nora stepped away from the microphone. She stepped away from the microphone so she can't hijack it anymore. All right, we'll be back next week. Pretty regular schedule. Enjoy it. Bye.